We're in chapter 25.
We're in the midst of, aren't we?
Page 109, 110.
Yes.
And
that's the bookmark.
We have been, we're wrapping things up over here, explaining what the pasuk ki karav elecha hadavar ma'od b'ficho ulbilvavecha la'asaisa means. That's in your heart and your mouth to do it. And he says it's very easy to do it. And we left off, the last thing that he said was that a Jew, on average, he gave the example of a suspect adulterous woman. And it says that, why is it that anybody would do such a thing? Is because kisista ishte, the woman went astray, because ein adam over avera elin kem nichnas baruch shtus. A person only does an avera, something wrong, if they suddenly become temporarily insane, meaning that they don't understand that what they're doing is going to sunder their connection with the Almighty. And when it would come, for example, to a test of idolatry, this same woman who is willing to have an adulterous relationship would never ever think about bowing down to an idol, and would even go so far as to suffer the pains of death rather than having to go through any type of idolatry. Okay? And we know that controlling yourself is a whole lot easier than getting yourself killed. So you really see that, what is it with the psyche with individuals when people would do something wrong, not thinking that it's something wrong, as opposed to, say, suffering martyrdom, which that they would do no problem. So we were on the third line, kol shekain. All the more so. It's the first paragraph in the English, and it's the third line down, in three lines from the end of the line in the Hebrew. Kol shekain sheyesha lekabel ba'av avarasin kidei ledavka b'olam v'ed. So it says, we sort of stopped in the middle of a sentence, that the, how much more so it is that a person should be willingly accept with love to control themselves in order, as an expression of love, in order to cleave to Hashem. Because what's going to happen is, when a person does Hashem's will with this service, then what will be revealed in the person is the innermost aspect of Hashem's inner will. Azai ein davar nifrid klal uklal yis yeshu davar bifnei atzmai. And that he is no way separated at all from Hashem as a separate entity. In other words, what's happening over here? We actually stopped in the middle of a sentence, but what happens when a person says, I don't need to. Okay? It's like I say, there's a statement my wife kind of criticizes me for saying it. It says, there are currently about 500,000 kosher products on the market. But that doesn't mean you have to eat them all. Okay, so
I heard that. I heard that joke a thousand.
Yes, okay, we're taping this, please, hello.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so when a person controls themselves, not that we're living lives of denial, we don't do that. How many times do I have to say we don't believe in lives of denial? We believe in utilization. So it's true that a person doesn't have to eat 500,000 different things, but what they do eat, they should do it in a way to serve Hashem. And if a person does say, you know, I really can't justify my eating that thing right now, whatever it is, fill in the blank. It doesn't have to be ice cream, it could be a tomato. I can't justify myself eating that tomato right now. Okay, so Hashem says, look at that guy, he's controlling himself. He's not allowing his animal instincts to just like take over. He's like doing something, and why is he doing it? One person says, nah, I can't justify myself doing this right now. What does that mean? That means that the person says, I am aware that there is a greater game plan by which the Almighty is involved with the creation. And according to the way I see it, this doesn't fit into the game plan. And therefore, since it doesn't fit into the game plan the way I see it, so I'm not going to get involved with it. So Hashem gives the guy a big thumbs up and goes, yes!
It's the difference between serving Hashem and serving yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly so, because another person says, now what happens is, not only is it his godly soul gets a big charge, but his animal soul, with all the garments of the animal soul, the thought, speech, and action, get supercharged by and become united in an absolute unity with Hashem's will. Why? Because this is what Hashem wants the person to do. So when a person is doing what Hashem wants, they become an extension of Hashem's will. You can take this at a very simple level. Okay, you tell your kid, take out the garbage, and the kid takes out the garbage. So now there's a connection which is made because your will has been followed. The garbage is out, and it's your kid who is the one who is the vehicle by which your will has been conveyed. So now, when we do something, we're not just talking about mitzvahs, that with a mitzvah you have to say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah. And we talked about this last week, the idea that Asher means that Hashem is really happy with it, and that we become sanctified by doing Hashem's mitzvahs, and that we're dedicated to holiness. There's no bracha for deciding you're not going to eat something. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah, because I didn't eat this thing. No, there's no such bracha. But what does the word kedusha mean? Kedusha means hafrash, is separating yourself from the mundane. So the person is indeed sanctifying himself. So when it says in that pasuk, he's kedushim v'tiyo kedushim, that you should sanctify yourself and be kadosh. So what that's talking about is in things in which there are no mitzvahs involved, because that's where it's great. Mitzvahs, if it's a mitzvah, you got to do it. Every mitzvah that comes by your way, you got to do it. If there's something wrong with it, you got to stay away from it. But it's the gray area that you have to decide, well, do I do it? Do I not do it? Can I use it to serve Hashem? If I can use it to serve Hashem, however reason what it is, I'm going to be able to serve Hashem, and we talked about this before, then the person becomes a holy individual. And I've said this many times. And how long does that take? 5 seconds. If a person can think for 5 seconds, why do I need to do this? And he comes up with a good answer, so then he's a holy dude. Simple as that. Okay. V'yichud zeh l'mayla hu nitzchi l'olam vo'ed. Just like we said at the end of the last chapter, 24, that when a person does something wrong, regardless how insignificant it may be, it's like taking the head of the king and sticking it in a toilet full of filth. Even if he does it for a minute, it has an impression there. There's something going on. So it says here, now what happens is, let's say a person controlled himself for 5 minutes. And then after 5 minutes, he said, oh, what the heck, I'm doing it anyway. Does that mean he did nothing? No. He controlled himself for 5 minutes.
That's amazing.
So that Hashem now says the guy gets 5 minutes of controlling himself. And that connection that he has, that he united himself with the infiniteness of Hashem's will and wisdom, is eternal. He got a 5-minute eternal connection with Hashem. He couldn't control himself past 5 minutes. Okay, no, that's another story. Because in Judaism, whenever a person does something good, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's regardless of what happens afterwards. So I used to do mifts and neshek, you know, I'd be, you know, handing out candles. So a lady said, what do you want to give this to me for? She said, I don't keep Shabbos. What do I do Friday night? I watch television. Okay? So I tell her, listen, you know what, lady? light the candles on top of the television. That was before flat screens. Okay? Put the candles on top of the television and light them there and say, Asher Kiddush on Vizoy Savat Tzivana Lahadlik Ner Shal Shabbos Kiddush. You just did something good. And now when you're watching television, you'll notice the Shabbos candles too. So you'll be observing the Shabbos by watching the television. You'll be seeing the Shabbos candles. The fact that you lit the Shabbos candles doesn't take away from the fact. They're still lit.
That's right.
What you did afterwards is regardless of the fact. It doesn't take away from the Shabbos candles. That connection that the person makes is forever.
It's amazing.
You heard the expression, diamonds are forever, mitzvahs are forever. Mitzvahs are our diamonds.
Yeah, yeah.
El Shematu Tachas Hazman. Down here in this terrestrial world, we are limited by time and place. And so to us, it seems like the connection was only going to be for the 5 minutes. Because after 5 minutes, the guy's not doing it anymore. So after that 5 minutes, so he's involved with something, so he's not getting the thumbs up from God anymore. Because that's his perception. But since Hashem is Lamayla Mazman Umakam, Hashem is higher than time, so the thumb is still up. For the previous 5 minutes, he still gets that. It doesn't say, oh, look what he's doing now, thumbs down. That's a whole separate thing. Okay, and totally and completely irrelevant to the fact that the guy did what he did for the previous 5 minutes. Meaning at that specific time alone when he occupied himself in the Torah and mitzvahs. Because afterwards, what's going to happen if he goes and engages in some other occupation, so he then becomes separate from this unity. For example, if he involves himself in something which is a total waste of time, which has absolutely no purpose in serving God at all. So that time, so he's not getting a thumbs up. That which he did before, so that's already done. So he's got that eternal connection. That's there. For the couple of minutes, however it is that he's occupied, that he's off away from what he's supposed to be doing. So, okay, good. No, so he's that time he's separated. But afterwards, when he goes back to serve Hashem, and he goes back and learns, and he davens, and mevakesh mechala, u'machila l'mahashem, al shehayev shel ha'isak, oz b'ter v'lois isak, that, for example, now he's realized, you know, that was a real waste of time. You know, when you're in the middle of doing it, it seems like okay, but then after the time passes and you realize, you know, that was a real time waster. It's like no one plans, they put it down in their calendar, their Palm Pilots, any place, that on Tuesday between 5 and 5:20, I'm going to waste time.
Yeah.
That doesn't, it's not a planned thing. You don't plan to waste time.
Right.
At 5:20, the guy looks back and says, what have I been doing since 5 o'clock? Man, that was a real waste of time. It's always post facto. Mm. And why is it that it was a waste of time? It's because the person didn't stop for a second and say, what am I doing before he did it? See, that's really what the key to holiness is the person has, it says, Chacham Einav Bereishah. He talked about this later on. A wise man's eyes are in his head. Meaning that he can see the ramifications of his action before he does the action. That's a wise person.
Contemplate.
I can figure out how am I going to feel or what's going to be the ramifications of my action if I do this.
Do such a thing.
And then reflects on it and decides, well, is it worth then doing or not?
It's not so simple when you're caught up in the moment.
If you're caught up in the moment, yeah. Right, exactly. So yeah. That's why the person has to stop.
Give some forethought.
5 seconds. It's all it takes, 5 seconds. Okay, maybe this should be the title of my book, 5 Seconds to Holiness.
There you go.
One of those self-help books that you find in Barnes & Noble that there doesn't sell.
It's a good idea.
Okay.
How do you know?
Yeah, okay. Hashem yislach leh. What happens as soon as the guy asks for forgiveness? What happens? Hashem forgives him. as he goes at great length later on about the bracha of Slach Lanu, Geras HaTshuva, towards the end of Geras HaTshuva. So he says, what happens? You say Slach Lanu three times a day. Forgive us, Hashem. Why do you say Slach Lanu in the morning? For all the things that you did the night before. And why do you say Slach Lanu in the afternoon? For all the things that you did in the morning. And why do you say Slach Lanu in the evening? For all the things you did in the afternoon. Okay, and what are you going to do tomorrow morning? Slach Lanu again for all the things you did in the afternoon in the previous night. Yeah. And it's ongoing, continually. Yeah.
We pretty much
okay, and the Alter Rebbe brings out a point that he brings the example, you have a kid who wants an apple. And the father doesn't want to give the kid an apple. But the kid's a real smarty pants. What does he do? He says, a bracha baruch atah Hashem alokeinu melech haolam b'rei pri ha'etz. So the father doesn't want the kid to say a bracha levitala. So waste God's name, say and wanton use of God's name. So he gives the kid the apple. Okay? Well, I think one of my kids tried it on me once. I didn't get an apple, sorry. So I'm a toughie. I'm not like the guy in the story. Anyway, so the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah established a bracha. Baruch atah Hashem, Chanun Hamarba Lisleach. Blessed are you, Hashem, who is gracious and abundant to forgive. So, okay, to say a bracha chaynein hadas, maybe a person does get a little smarter every time they ask Hashem, please make me smarter. Maybe their IQ goes up like a micron. Okay, it went up from 120.1135 to 120.11354. You know, just like little tiny bit. Mm. Okay? That could be possible. Maybe it does. And therefore, that happens. It's Hashem made him smarter, so he can say the bracha, Chaynein Hadas, who bestows knowledge. But how could you say, you're taking lots of liberty over here. Blessed are you, Hashem, who is gracious and abundant to forgive.
Right.
That means you're forcing the issue.
Right.
Hashem has to forgive you. And it's never considered a bracha levitala. We don't say a brach shem kavod machu l'stolo el mvod afterwards. Good, fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mess with the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, thank you. They're the ones who fixed it, who set up the bracha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they said, they're pushing the envelope, that Hashem will forgive you as soon as you say the bracha. And then he asked, the Alter Rebbe over there just asked somewhat kind of, it seems like a glib question. Mm-hmm. He says, well, wait a minute, the next bracha is Gaal Yisrael, who redeems Israel. So why don't we get redeemed as soon as we, and he answers with a real patch. If it wouldn't be for the fact that we sinned in between Slach Lanu and Goel Yisroel, which is the very next bracha, then we would be redeemed. So, it's a very glib answer, too. Okay?
He's waiting for us.
Yeah, he's waiting for us. That's why we're here so long.
Right. That's right.
Right.
That's true.
Okay. Anyway, the Shem's not waiting for us. The Rebbe already said so. Okay, as our sages say, it's in a brisa in Masechta Yoma. It's actually in the first half of chapter 1 of Egeret Teshuva, he quotes it. A person, it's very hard to correct the non-performance of a positive mitzvah.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, it even says in the Gemara, Vita Ar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Al avodah zara gila raya shvichas damin v'loy viter al dvarim bittel zman a bittel Torah. Hashem will forgive. It's easier for Hashem to forgive for idolatry, adultery, and murder than it is for wasting time. Because with idolatry, adultery, and murder, so there's restitution that can be made. A person feels sorry about it, that he did it. He never did it. He won't promise he's never to do it again. It acts as a springboard for his getting closer to Hashem and his relationship to Hashem. Okay? So Hashem says, okay, I forgive the guy for it. But what about wasting time? Guy says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to learn 5 minutes more. So he could have learned 5 minutes more later and not wasted time.
So, why is that an idol worship? If he's not Bittul Torah, he's serving himself.
Bittul Torah happens, as we said, by itself. No one intentionally wastes time. Okay? Because of that, so now what happens is the guy realizes, you know, hey, I wasted time. What happened? A guy missed Kriya Shema in the morning. Whatever reason, maybe he woke up late, maybe, you know, he got involved, he said, I'll get to it, I'll say it later, and he realizes, oh no, he's already passed Sov Zman Kriya Shema. So how's he going to tshuva? He's going to say tshuva, he's going to say Shema tomorrow twice? It's not going to help.
What if he's in another mitzvah?
Listen, Hashem understands these things too. This guy happened to let the time go by. Okay, let's say he slept in. He slept until 11 o'clock. Okay, he went to sleep, he was up learning until 5 o'clock in the morning. So what happens 5 o'clock in the morning? It's still dark outside. You can't daven, you can't say Shema. And he went to sleep, and the guy, Baruch Hashem, he only has 6 hours sleep. He wakes up at 11 o'clock. So he missed Zman Kriya Shema. He missed the time of saying Shema. So he wakes up, he feels bad. What's he going to do now to correct it? Like I said, he's going to say Shema tomorrow twice. That's not going to correct it because there's no mitzvah to say Shema tomorrow twice. He missed it today.
Right.
So it says, what should he do? It says he should say to Hashem, I am not moving from this place until you forgive me. Okay?
I might be stuck there a while.
Little temper tantrum going on over here. But it says, Hashem immediately forgives the guy. As soon as he comes to Hashem and says, I really feel bad that I missed Shema. And I'm really going to try really harder to make sure that I always say the Shema on time from now on. And I'm not going to move from this place, Hashem, until you forgive me. So Hashem forgives him immediately. How do I know? Because it says so in the books. It's the only reason I know. Happens so.
Incredible.
Well, Zat Tiknu Berachos Lach Lanu Sholish Pami B'Chol Yom. We just said. Al Avin Bittul Torah Shein Adam Nitzel Memenu B'Chol Yom K'May Tamid Shehaya Mechaper Al Mitzvos Aseh. And it just is this whole thing about Lach Lanu. This is the Tefilas B'Makam Tamidim Tiknu, that the davening that we daven, it takes the place of the Korban Tamid. And why do they offer up the Korban Tamid in the morning? Because of all the things that happened the night before. We're down the bottom of the page. And why is it that we offer up a Korban Shalbein Arbaim, the evening continual sacrifice? It's because of all the things that happened during the day. Okay? So instead of doing that, so we daven Shachris, we daven Mincha. Ve'ein ze echta ve'eshuv. And he says it's not called I will sin and I will do tshuva. Which is a person could say, listen, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go do what I want, and I'm going to do tshuva afterwards. Mm-hmm. I got it already planned. Okay? This is a heinous individual. Because, as he's going to say right here, he's using the tshuva as an excuse to go do something wrong. Later I'll do tshuva. So it says, Ein maspikim lelasas tshuva, zman lasas tshuva. It says they don't give him the time, they don't afford him the opportunity to do tshuva. He says he gets kept busy, so that he never has an opportunity to correct what he did wrong. Hashem says, I don't want such tshuva. A planned tshuva on the sin that's going to come later? No, that's not the way it works. Tshuva works retroactively. As he says right now. So it says, this whole thing about saying Slach Lanu is not Echta Ve'eshuv. Why is it? It says, listen, the guy knows that he's going to be saying Slach Lanu sometime in the near future. Maybe it'll count. It'll take, you know. He says, no, that's not what happens. And when a person says Slach Lanu, forgive me for the time that I wasted, he didn't say, you know what, I'm going to waste time right now. And in a couple of hours, I'm going to say Slach Lanu. That's not what he said. What happened is he wasted a bunch of time, and now that he comes to say Slach Lanu, so now, post facto, please forgive me for the time that I wasted. Now, his wasting time happens to be one of those things which a person is not nitzel b'chol yom. This person is not saved. It's guaranteed in the course of a person's day that they're going to waste time. As much and as hard as a person tries, time is going to be wasted. Okay, but think about it for a second, because otherwise, listen, you know, what does it mean otherwise? Every working second, the person has to be totally, completely involved in being dedicated to Hashem. Every second. So that when he's moving from here to there, he's saying words of Torah, thinking words of Torah.
Yeah.
You know, everything that he's doing is the covet l'shem shemayim. He's doing it for the sake of heaven. There's no ulterior motive on his part. So such diligence is very hard to maintain in the course of a person's waking hours.
Mm-hmm.
And even as a person is falling asleep, why is he going to sleep? If a person is going to sleep just because he's tired, he might as well be a horse. Because why do horses go to sleep?
Because they're tired.
Because they're tired. Why is he going to sleep? He's going to sleep so that he has the energy so the next day to be able to serve Hashem.
Right.
One of Rama Lipsker's verses. So if you go to sleep like a horse, you're going to wake up like a horse.
Mm.
This is, you have to go to sleep like a Jew. You know, a Kriya Shema Almita with the whole, how did my day go today? How will my tomorrow go? Mm. You know? This is why you can understand now why it is that Moshe said to the generation that was going into Israel that they have to say Shema twice a day. L'kavol of Malchus Shemayim b'Mesiris Nefesh. In order that they receive upon themselves the yoke of heaven with self-sacrifice. The Jews who were in the desert didn't need reminders.
Not really, no.
Rabbanu Shalom, their bread, where did it come from? It fell out of the sky. Their clothing
grew with them.
Right. The rose, the air conditioning, the whole business over there, the well. Okay, they got Moshe. They're learning how many hours a day? They're learning with Moshe.
25 out of 25.
So these people didn't need a reminder that, listen, you know, there's such a thing called Hashem Echad.
Right.
They're living it.
Yeah.
Now what happens, a generation that goes into Israel, and Jews become suddenly members of an agrarian economy.
Mm.
You want to eat? You got to work for it.
Dig.
And so what happens is a person is digging in the dirt.
Right.
Okay? He becomes, you know how to say a farmer in Yiddish? One word that I heard recently is an erdmensch, a dirt man, an earth man.
Dirt man,
yes.
Erdmensch.
Okay? The guy works in the dirt. That's where his focus is the whole time. Is in the dirt. And so what happens when he's working in the dirt, he could forget about Hashem Echad. So we tell this person, hey listen, dirt man, say Shema twice a day. Accept upon yourself Hashem as boss, to the point of B'chol Nafshecha at least, that you'd be willing to give up your soul for it. Says, why did they have to do this for? Did they need it to get protection from Hashem? Moshe already promised them. Listen, you know, you're going to go into Israel. Okay? And Israel then was a lot bigger than it is now. The country of Lebanon didn't exist. Jordan didn't exist. Part of Syria didn't exist. This was all Israel. But there's a lot of space, and there's a lot of hostile nations around them.
Right.
So he says, don't worry, Hashem says, Moshe says, don't worry. The dread of the nations will be upon you. You do what you're supposed to do, and they'll do what they're supposed to do. And they'll be afraid of you, even though, Ariat Mikol Ha'amim, you're the smallest of all nations, but no one's going to mess with the Jews. Because you're going to, because of what? You're connected to Hashem. But still, even that was true. Moshe Rabbeinu said, say Shema twice a day, please. So that you'll be able to stay in that groove. You need that focus. You know, the question is asked, there's a double question. You need shofar. What is the shofar blowing for? In order that we should accept Hashem as king. Mm. And why do we say the Shema every day is in order we should accept Hashem as king? So no shofar. Let's just blow the shofar once a year, and that way you don't have to say Shema. But the answer is obvious. It's not enough, because what happens is the course of a year, people are thinking, well, it's been 9, 10, 11 months since I accepted upon the yoke of heaven on me, and I don't really feel it anymore. Mm. And so therefore we tell them, listen, you know, every day, just a little feed in. Mm-hmm. So then they ask the question, that's the why blow shofar. If you're going to say, do you have to say Shema and Rosh Hashanah? You have to say Shema and Rosh Hashanah twice a day, and you have to do it with Mizmana, and it's time. So why say the Shema? Or why blow the shofar then? And the answer is because how are you going to be able to say the Shema and be Makabel Shemayim if you don't blow the shofar? The shofar is what gives you the impetus and the excitement to say the Shema. It's the start, it's the general source, you might say, for accepting it. Since it is that our fulfillment of the Torah and the mitzvahs are dependent upon our accepting the yoke of heaven, and that when a person's doing a mitzvah, he should feel that he's doing it with self-sacrifice, and this concept of being willing to give up a person's life should be set in the person's heart constantly, day and night. And never be lost from his memory. Mm. Okay, that's the constant diligence. Because what are we trying to do over here? Is, what's chapter 25? Chapter 5 is the conclusion of the shorter, longer way. Mm-hmm. Which the shorter, longer way is to tap into the natural, God-given love and fear of Hashem. Mm-hmm. Okay, chapter 1 through 17 is to evoke a love and fear of Hashem through the intellectual means that we have.
Chapter
1 through 17. Chapter is to evoke, that's called the longer, shorter way.
Start okay. Again.
The longer, shorter way is 1 through 17. Because okay. it's a longer thing to evoke, to serve a person to sit and intellectualize and to use their brain to be able to evoke a love and fear of Hashem. It's called the longer way because it takes a long time, but it's called the longer, shorter way because once a person's got it, he's in the groove. But here we're talking chapter 18 through 25 that we're trying to focus on the natural, innate love that because we are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they did the hard work already. They got us a Nefesh Elokis, which has an innate love for Hashem, which is constantly trying to strive for godliness. So all the person has to do, and you know that there's always that statement when everybody says, all you got to do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. So all you have to do is to remember constantly our connection to Hashem, and therefore what will happen? You too will feel a love and fear of Hashem constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's naturally within you. This doesn't take big chochmas. Right. A person has that you have that, you are connected to Hashem. And if a person is going to feel constantly, I am connected to Hashem, and I'd be willing to do whatever it takes for Hashem, constantly, A plus. You get to sit here and teach a class. Because this a person can do. This is not hard. You do it at intervals all day long. There is nobody in the world who does everything they want to do, says everything they want to do, or even thinks everything they want to think. Everybody exerts some self-control. Yeah. So you can do it. Why come this minute you could and this minute you can't? The truth is this minute you could and this minute you could too. It requires diligence. Okay, that's what it requires, is diligence. Because the love that you have for Hashem, Because he knows. Everybody knows. He says, you know, if I intentionally waste time right now, so I'm cutting myself off from Hashem. No, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to waste that time. I'm going to do something constructive now.
Right.
Okay, so he sits there for 15 minutes thinking, what can I do constructive?
At least he didn't waste his time.
Oh, yes, okay.
According to what he came up with.
Yeah, okay. So he says, this a person can do constantly and diligently. And it just takes not exertion. Because, like you said, a person's controlling themselves all the time, every day.
Right.
It just means to just extend it a little bit.
Right.
He was able to control himself for 5 seconds. Make it 7 seconds. Okay, he can control himself for 7 seconds. Make it 8.5 seconds. That's the exercise that he's saying in 18 through 25.
Right.
And you know what will happen? This guy gets A+. Why? Because he says right at the beginning of chapter 18, not everybody has the intellectual ability, the knowledge, the talent to sit and meditate until they come up to the conclusion, oh yeah, I should be totally enamored with God. It takes a lot of, first of all, it takes a somewhat of an IQ. It takes a lot of background information. And it takes the time to do it. But not everybody is afforded those things. You think Hashem doesn't know what a person's IQ is? Hashem knows. You think a person doesn't know, Hashem doesn't know that this person has to work for a living? Who is it that made it that this person has to work for a living? It's Hashem, of course. So Hashem understands all that. But this is when a person's in the middle of his business. Mm-hmm. Okay? He's standing by a counter someplace. He's putting in some wires somewhere. He's sitting at a computer writing a Dvar Torah. Who knows what the guy is doing? Teaching a class. Whatever it is that the person happens to be doing, he can be doing this simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And every instance of exertion, it says, Yistalik yikar dekutsha brichu b'chule olmim. The glory of God is elevated throughout the spectrum of creation. For just every instant that the person is doing it. We're not talking hours. We're not talking day. Today I'm going to control myself totally and completely. No. It says when the Friedrich came to this country, so he probably insisted on it in other times also, but he used to get it's called a duch, din v'cheshman, a report on all the students from the rabbis running the yeshiva. Okay, what is this bachur doing? In detail. So the Rosh Yeshiva, that's pretty scary, knowing that every whatever, you know, and it was recommended, I don't know, once a month. And when I found out that my Rosh Yeshiva was writing into the Rebbe every month and putting in details what I was doing, I went, what? Why didn't you tell me before? Hello? So, anyway, so he wrote, this one year, Rosh Yeshiva wrote in that this bacher sits and thanks Chassidus for 5 minutes before davening. The Friedrich Rebbe went wild. He does this? This is a wonderful thing. It didn't say he sat there and meditated for hours on end and davened for 6 hours. He said, no. Before davening, he was done with Karbonis, he had his tefillin on, he's waiting for the minyan to start. The minyan started at 9:30. So from 9:25 to 9:30 every single day, he sat and he thought Chassidus. This is a Friedrich Rebbe, this is terrific. The Rebbe could not laud enough praises on this student. What is this, 5 minutes? 5 minutes is a lot. Try thinking about something continuously for 5 minutes. And it doesn't even have to be Chassidus. Okay, let's continue. We'll start 26. So that this chapter here, chapter 26, begins the section with ends with chapter 34. Some people say 33, some people say 34. I like to tie 34 into it. That deals with psychological problems. All kinds of psychological problems. If there's a psychological problem you could think of, it's dealt with here. used to teach a class to mental health professionals. And the Tanya, up till this point, to chapter 25, I taught it to them like it was a psychology book. And they were very impressed with it. When we got to chapter 26, they absolutely said, this is 200 years old. People are just starting to think like this now. Okay, so it's modern modern psychological thought. What to do with your problems? It's an interesting thing. If you look at the Teichacha, the 98 curses that Moshe promises will befall the Jewish people if they don't adhere to the Torah and the mitzvahs. Okay, according to the Living Torah, the translation of the first two you'll become anxious and panicked. I think there's what's in the word depressed in there also. Okay, what's anxiety? Where's the source of anxiety? Anxiety doesn't mean that there's a problem. Anxiety means that you've got a problem because there's a problem.
Perception.
That's all anxiety is. So how are you going to deal with that? Okay, so this is the first curse that the Almighty says afflicts the Jewish people with. Anxiousness, anxiety. Okay, and where is it? This is not like later on when it talks about armies marching through your land and women eating their children and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a problem between a person's right and left ear. Okay, so now, so the Alter Rebbe puts it here because we just said that you have the tools. Most of us, believe it or not, have the tools for chapters 1 through 17. It just takes a lot of effort and toil and to put it in. You really got to have, you know, to get the background information takes a lot of time, and then to be able to sit and to do it and to have the time to do it. Chapter 18 through 25, he says, everybody could do this one. Okay? What happens, though, is why don't people do it? They don't feel like it. Bottom line, why are we not all running around? All these Jews that are in the world, why are we not all Beinonis? It's because we don't want to be. Why don't we want to be Beinonis? Two-word answer, the Yetzirah. And the Yetzirah has a whole pocket full of tricks. And every trick is tailor-made for each individual. If I were to tell you my problems, you would look at me and say, huh? That's a problem by you. And you tell me your problems. And I say, I don't see this necessarily as a problem per se. But because your Yetzirah styles it such just perfect to hit you just where, exertion is a New Jersey expression, just to hit you where you breathe. I don't know if that's gone anywhere else besides New Jersey, but that's the expression. Hit him where he breathes.
Right.
Okay? This is the what the Yetzirah's modus operandi is.
Mm.
So this person really wants to get into it. He's into the Judaism thing and he really wants to get going and he's just like, he's ready to cook and he gets hit with depression. And I can't get out of bed depression. This is a problem now. This is the tool of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah says, listen, this guy is so alacritous and so full of life and vim and vigor. You know what we're going to do? We're going to smack him with a little depression. Let's see what he does with that. Okay? So these chapters, what he does, the Alter Rebbe addresses all these problems as tools of the Yetzirah. So how do you deal with your Yetzirah? Baram Kidgain, starting chapter 26. Da tzarech lo'idi klal gadol. You have to know a general rule. Ki kemashin etzach l'netzach davar gashmi kidgain. If you have something like involving a victory, for example. Shnei anashim mis'afkim zeim zeh lihipol zeh zeh. Okay, you got two guys. The example here is taken from some other source. This parable. We're involved with Greco-Roman wrestling. Okay, you know the difference between collegiate wrestling and Greco-Roman wrestling? Kiva, you should know the difference.
Clothing.
No, they do Greco-Roman in college also. Mm. Okay, what's the difference? Is in Greco-Roman wrestling, you're not allowed to go after the guy's legs. You're only allowed to deal with just above the waist.
Above the waist, that's right.
Okay, so it's your torso versus his torso.
Right.
That's called Greco-Roman. As a collegiate, you're shooting at a guy's legs. You try to take him down this way.
Whatever.
So here's this guy. This is what the example is. You got two guys, okay, and they like hung on to each other, okay, and they're trying to push each other down. Okay, that's the example. You got the pit over here. They're in this like they're wrestling around in the dirt over there. Right. Try and knock each other down. If one of the guys is lazy and heavy, what's going to happen to him? He's going to lose. He's going to be looking at the lights. Even if he's stronger than the guy. Okay, the other guy, the short guy, the little guy, is saying, man, I'm going to take this guy down. I got to really put some energy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the guy down. Okay? It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So too it is also with the war against the Yetzirah. It is impossible to be victorious over the Yetzirah while lying in bed.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
You know what? I'll get to it tomorrow.
I'll take care of that later.
It's not going to help. Okay, that this comes from, that this source, that his laziness comes from depression, or maybe the guy's not really depressed. Let's call him melancholy, for example. He just doesn't have the get up and go.
Yeah.
What does that come from? He calls it timtum halev. A stuffed heartedness, like a stone. The heart is the source of the emotions.
Mm.
And if this guy's got a heart like a stone, it means he's lost his sensitivity to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
That's the source and root of all of our problems, is a disconnect from spirituality.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he's just not he's not functioning properly.
Right.
Okay? Is it his fault? It's not his fault, but he can deal with it.
Hmm.
How is it that a person is going to be able to serve Shem properly? With alacrity, which comes from joy, and an open heart, which is pure and free of any trace of worries and depression of the world. This is the way in which a person is going to be able to serve Hashem.
Right.
It's an interesting thing. He says he doesn't say here that if the guy doesn't have any problems.
No.
A problem is a problem, fine. A problem is not really a problem. A problem is a solution yet to happen. That's what a problem is. When does the problem become a problem? Is when the person, before he gets to thinking about the solution, starts worrying about the problem.
Right.
I have a problem.
Takes on the problem.
Okay. Oh, I'm so anxious about the problem.
That's
so depressed about the problem.
Right.
That's when the problem becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if a person looks at any situation as a challenge, hey, I'm going to beat this one.
Right.
Okay, there is no person alive, I don't care who the person is, where they live, where they come from, what their background is, there is no person alive in this world who can run 100-yard hurdles as fast as they can run a 100-yard dash. The hurdles are put there for one intention and one intention only, to slow you down,
trip you up.
And to go, not to trip you up, to go over them.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
Okay, when you're running, this is what killed my track career, was they asked me to run high hurdles.
It's funny.
And in ninth grade, I killed my knee. Okay, 1, 2, 3, over, 1, 2, 3, over, 1, 2, 3, over. That's
one,
the way.
1, 2, 3, bang.
And that's exactly what happened. 1, 2, 3, bang.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was the end of my knee.
Yeah.
Okay, 14-year-old, and
good.
My track career was done.
Yeah, it was good
at
hurdles.
Yeah, yeah. So the... But the hurdle is there to, as the expression goes, to keep the parable running. Oy. Take it in stride.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Pun intended.
You have to take it in stride. The hurdle's there. It's going to slow you down.
Yeah.
But you can't run up to the hurdle and say, oh my goodness, there's a hurdle here.
Let's stop.
What am I going to do? I'm going to stop. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to get all sad. I'm going to turn around and go back. Sorry. No, those are not options. You see the hurdle, you run over the thing.
Yeah.
You just jump right over the thing. That's what every single going-to-be solution entails. And then the problem's not a problem. Okay? As it says, you have the word stress, and you have the word crisis. Okay? There's something called, they now have this word called good stress. A person has to have a little bit of good stress. If you didn't have any stress at all, you wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. Everybody gets out of bed for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a great term.
Yeah, good stress. Like, for example,
keeps you alive.
What gets you moving? Something is stressing you to get you moving.
I thought originally that was called motivation.
Okay. So they call it
now. It's good stress.
Now it's called good stress. Yes. Like even if it's you have to go to the bathroom. Okay, that's stressing you out that you have to get to the bathroom. Therefore, you're going to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. Okay. And which usually when you wake up, you go, you got the covers on. Like mornings like today, it's dark. The alarm clock goes off. Right. And it's like the heat hasn't really kicked in so much yet,
right.
And you're underneath your warm blanket,
right.
And you have to go to the bathroom really, really bad.
Yeah.
Okay? What happens to the cold room and the dark and whatever else, and you're a little bit tired, and listen, I gotta go to the bathroom, forget it, that wins. Okay? So there is that positive motivation. Usually think of stress as what? Stress is that feeling of an inability to cope is generally negative. How we translate the word stress.
Negative situation.
Yeah, negative stress is, I can't do this.
Right, can't handle it.
And that is a killer.
Right.
It causes high blood pressure, it causes diabetes, it causes cancer, it causes stroke, it causes heart attacks. That's the effect of that stress.
Yeah.
Okay? What's a crisis? A crisis is stress with immediacy. It's got to be done right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a crisis.
Mm.
Okay? So if a person's facing a crisis, if we can take out one of the components, either the stress or the immediacy, right. End of crisis.
Right. Right.
The easiest thing to do is saying, well, if this thing happened to me, it must be I should be able to handle it. And
correct.
That's the bottom line in all
correct,
of this.
Correct, correct.
There's a story involving in Lubavitch. Lubavitch was a very small town. Mm. It did not have its own railroad station.
Mm.
The distance from Lubavitch to the closest railroad was 7 versts, however far a verst is. I think it's about the same length as a furlong.
Mm-hmm.
Which a furlong is not very long anyway. So 7 viewers, and that's where the telegraph office was, mm-hmm. which was the email of the day.
It's done about the symbol.
Yeah.
You've already said it, but go ahead.
Yes. So, you've heard me tell the story before?
Yeah, just making sure you know.
Oh, I've told it here before?
Say.
I used to have it on my
side. Say.
Go ahead. Oh, you're listening to it before? Okay, so you know the story. Okay.
Okay.
So this, Zundel, so in Lubavitch, they didn't have telegraphs. The only way they had is a guy would get a telegram, and he would come to, on his bicycle, and he'd come into Lubavitch, I got a telegram for so-and-so. So there are two people named Zundel, and they're both tea merchants, Zundel Gross and Zundel Klein. Zundel Gross was called Gross, meaning big, because he was a tea magnate. Zundel Klein was called Klein because he was a schlamazel.
Mm.
Okay, he could barely make ends meet.
Mm.
So one day, the courier comes into town. He's got a letter addressed to Zundel the tea merchant.
Mm.
Okay, there's two Zundel the tea merchants. There, Zundel the tea merchant. Give the note to Zundel Klein. Your shipment has been stopped at the border and confiscated. You lost the tire thing.
Mm.
Out. Stop. Okay, Zundel reads this and thinks, oh no, I lost my shipment. I can't pay my creditors. I'm going to be thrown out into the street. My kids are going to die. I can't handle this. And he faints.
Hmm.
And every time, if somebody faints in the street, it causes a big commotion. Every time he wakes up, he says, my tea. And he faints again.
Hmm.
And this goes on a whole bunch of times. somebody ran to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or Shmuel, the Marash, and said that he says the next time he wakes up, before he says Maiti again, tell him that the letter was addressed to somebody else. It was just the other one. So the guy said, was this the other one? Huh. Baruch Hashem. At that moment, the courier comes back. This time it's addressed to Zundel Gross, the tea merchant in Lubavitch. He looks at it and says, your shipment has been confiscated at the border. You lost the entire shipment. So he takes a look at it and crumbles it up and says, okay, next time. Okay, so now word gets around that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is a prophet. Not only can he can tell who the letter is for before the letter is even delivered. So his brother told him, listen, they're saying that you're profiting Moisim, you're making miracles over here. So he said, miracles, miracles. It says that Hashem only asks us to do and to handle that which we can.
Right.
And this Zundel, the Klein, couldn't handle it.
Couldn't do it. Right.
That means it wasn't his problem. Zundel Gross had no problem with it.
Right.
So if we're going to be faced with a problem, the way to handle the problem is to say, first and foremost, it's not a problem.
Right.
Once we do that, and we're going to say, okay, so let's see, it's not a problem. Let me think, how could, this is really exciting, how am I going to be able to figure out a solution to this problem? Because now what that does is that puts you into a positive mode to be actually able to engage in problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now true of whatever it is that a person has a problem with. And there are three things that we have problems with. He talks about it in the next page, which I'm going to get to today. The three things that people get depressed and three things that people worried about.
Mm.
What are the three things people worry about, Shlomo? Name me one. Three things people worry about.
Money.
Okay, yeah, that's one.
Place to live.
That's part of money.
Children.
Kids, family. Right. And the third thing?
Taxes.
No, nah, that's money.
Nah. Dying.
Health.
Health.
Yes. Those are the three things that people worry about.
Right.
Not necessarily any particular order. It depends on who the individual is. Parnassa.
Whatever's bothering them that day.
Family and health.
Yep.
And you're going to get problems with all three. Okay, so the question is, the Rebbe, by dollars, said to Yossel Gutnick, I heard he said it even before dollars, that he's very fortunate because he has it good. And you know who Yossel Gutnick is? He's a millionaire, lives in Australia, Lubavitcher.
Okay.
He has it good in money. He has it good in health, and he has it good in children and his family. He doesn't have any problems with these things.
Mm.
So he says, the Rebbe said, fortunate is such a person. Mm. It is rare and far between.
Mm.
He says, people are lucky if they consider yourself fortunate if you have two of the three.
Yeah.
Either money and health, or money and children, or children and health. Health and what's the other combination? Health and children, whatever.
That's
right. So, consider yourself fortunate if you got two out of three.
Mm.
But to have three out of three, this is a very, very unusual person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we all have these problems. Okay, but he says, as soon as a person realizes that this is not a problem, it's a challenge.
Right.
God is saying, okay, let's see what you're made out of. Mm. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to show God. You're going to say, God, this is, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm going to go do it. We can continue, should we stop? I can stop here if you want, or I can continue. Okay, so we are on the middle of page 111, where it says, Mashikasav v'chol eitzev yiyemayser, and in the paragraph in English, it says, as if it were written, in all sadness, there will be profit. To be continued.